I'm your daddy.
I can be smart when it's important.
I'm your daddy. I'm
sorry to this.
I'm your daddy.
Welcome to Daddy Dailies, the podcast hosted by Not Your Daddy's Films. On a film set, dailies are sent out after a shoot day so you can see the work in progress. Daddy Dailies are conversations that go behind the scenes so you can see what work went into the process and be better armed to succeed in the industry.
Daddy Dailies, hosted by Not Your Daddy's Films.
Okay, shall we do it?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Welcome back to the Daddy Dailies podcast. I am Carly Tamarin, one of the founders of Not Your Daddy's Films. Not Your Daddy's Films is a community dedicated to leveling the playing field for women and non-binary folks in film and TV. We are not your old daddies. We are new and improved. I'm a daddy. You're a daddy. We are all daddies here. Don't forget to click subscribe on whatever podcast app you are listening to us on. And without further ado, I am so excited to bring our next guests onto the show. You may know them from writing one of the best movies ever, obviously, in my opinion, Joyride. It is Teresa Hsiao and Sherry Chiba Prabhadamrong. Thank you for coming on our show.
Watch the names.
Thanks for having us. A little sweat there for a second. So we are going to start with a little game called No Fucking Way.
Yeah,
I love it. I love it already. Okay, so basically our listeners want to have their minds fucking blown, whether it be your industry horror story or how you first got your start or something you just really wish you knew on your first project. Tell us something that will make us say, no fucking way.
Oh, I have one. Okay,
you go first.
It might be the same story, but so basically Cherry and I met because we both worked at Family Guy way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And we were actually the only two women writers on the show. There were actually more guys named Dave than there were women. It was the two of us, and there were three guys named Dave.
So and then a bunch of other guys.
And then a bunch of other But three Daves, two women. So no fucking way.
No fucking way. That is crazy.
Yeah.
I was going to take it back to like a very beginning in the industry story, which is not even mine, but a friend of mine. We both worked at the same agency. Literally, I believe it was his very first day of work. You know, he's just like rolling in all bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and his boss like called him and basically was like, you have to go to my house right now and flush all the cocaine down the toilet because the cops are coming. And that was like the first thing that he had to do in Hollywood. So no fucking way.
What was his boss's job? Was he like a...
We were at an agency.
Oh, at an agency.
Oh, agents.
Okay. So, well, on that note, we're going to take it back. I know you guys both do many, many things. Teresa, you also co-created and executive produced Awkwafina is Nora from Queens. Cherry, you've written multiple YA novels. And co-EP'd The Orville. You both wrote on Family Guy, among... obviously, so many other things.
And other Daves.
And among other Daves.
Daves slash Davids. Yeah.
Exactly. Was writing and producing always the goal, or did you start school with something else and it gradually changed from there?
Always the secret goal for me. I very much did not start school to do this because my parents basically, you know, not incorrect, said, this is very impractical. It's going to be very hard to, you know, actually make money writing. That's ridiculous. You should go do something else practical. So then I majored in psychology, also not practical, but you know,
we love,
and I had fun doing it. I did that on purpose just because it was the least number of credits where I could still graduate. So then I could fill out the rest of my like course load with like creative writing classes. Yep. So it was secret the entire time. And then my parents being immigrant parents who were just like grad school, they were like, now you have to go to law school. Mm-hmm. So I did no schooling, have to do the writing whatsoever, but I was writing secretly the entire time because I did know that that's what I wanted to do. But, you know, it had just been crammed into my head that it's wildly impractical and don't do it, you know. So I was like, all right, I'm not doing it. Meanwhile, I'm doing it the entire time.
Yeah.
Secretly. And then after I graduated from law school, I moved out to L.A. with my giant stack of student loans and then actually officially tried to start writing.
Yeah.
But it was also kind of a secret then because when I started working at the agency, the girl I replaced also was a writer, and she was leaving to go work as a writer's assistant on a TV show. And she asked me, do you want to write? And I was like, yes. And she was like, cool, don't tell anyone at the agency that. Just learn, you know, for now.
Yeah.
And just whatever, and just sort of like feel it out. Don't just like come out of the gates with that because no one is going to necessarily like that just as a thing. So I was undercover for a very long time.
Wow. Yeah. That's a long game.
It was a long, right.
It's a long con.
The
agency was like, all we care about is cocaine.
Well, we only care about cocaine. Yes, exactly. All we want you to do is be someone who wants to become an agent and do a lot of cocaine. So if you're not that, if you want to be a writer and have never done cocaine, get out.
I did not have this thought in my head that I was going to be a writer because I just didn't know that that was a possibility. I don't think either of us, we came into this like not knowing anyone in Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
We were just like, oh, yeah, sure, pipe dream. I like watching TV. I didn't know that people like wrote for TV necessarily. It was something like after I was in school and I studied economics. Very practical. Mm-hmm. I did a summer internship at a place called Lehman Brothers, which was a very prestigious investment bank at the time. Sure. And then it went bankrupt and triggered a $700 billion government bailout. So, you know, like when the safe thing to do was like go into finance and do this thing, when that like safe path like basically blows up in everyone's face, you're like, well, maybe let's try this other thing. And so, again, just because I liked watching TV, I was like, okay, I'm going to read, like, a few books about, like, how people do this. And just started writing scripts on the side while still having a sort of normal job, and ended up very kind of serendipitously, I answered, like, an ad that was like, we're looking for comedy writers. And I was like, well, I have a script. I'll just send my script in. And I got hired on like a very random Canadian kids show. And that was my first job. But it was like the first thing where I was like, okay, I'm going to quit my finance job now. And I'm going to actually get paid to write for television in Canada.
Yeah.
And that still, I was like, oh, this is exciting and very weird. I'm not even Canadian. I don't know. But that was like the first like, oh, people like actually want you to write and they will pay you money for it. And I was like, well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. What was your first job?
My first job was Family Guy. I did the assistant thing. Like I started an agency and then I worked for a TV producer and then I worked for another TV producer and then I was a writer's assistant and then I was a director's assistant. So I like did that entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
But along the way, I had applied for this thing called the CBS Writers Mentoring Program where they, you know, pair you up with a showrunner and with someone at the network, and you can go. I went and hung out in the writer's room of my showrunner mentor, Greg Garcia. And so I went out and I hung out for a couple of days in the writer's room at Yes Dear. And that is where I met Chris Sheridan, who, later that year, Family Guy had been canceled twice, I think, at that time, and it got uncanceled. So it was like on the air, it was going to be on the air again for the third time. And he was one of the showrunners for it. And so he just sort of, you know, I met through that program kind of just like, oh, in the room, just kind of like casual, whatever. But then later when he got that showrunning job, he asked me, he was like, do you have a spec script? Do you have an agent? You know, what are you trying to do? I was like, I have both. Please take my script. Here's my agent's number. And so that kind of, you know, like he read my script and had me meet David Goodman, one of the Family Guy Davids later, and Seth MacFarlane. So I got, you know, so then he called me in to meet them. And then a couple months later, then Family Guy was my first writing job.
Wild.
Yeah, it was crazy. I was terrified.
And were you guys hired at the same time?
No,
or she was already there?
Many years later. It's like when I started there were only two women. It was me and Alex Borstein at the time. And then a couple years after that, she had gotten more acting stuff. So she took time off, and so she wasn't a writer in the room anymore. And for a while, it was like just me by myself, lone woman in the room. Luckily, I'd been there for a couple years by then, so I was like comfortable with it. But looking back, it's insane.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like at the time it was also insane, but it was like, well, it's my job. What am I going to do? I have no control over the environment. I'm just going to show up and, you know, like do the work. But yeah, it was a while.
It was like the way of the world. Like we didn't ask those questions. I think.
Yeah. We're like a lower level writer. You can't just be like, hey, it's weird that there's no other girls here. And they're
right.
They're like, no, it's not.
You should be glad you're here.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Know, like,
yeah.
You're not
like, okay, I'm just trying not to get fired. You know?
Yeah. You're not even mentioning any of those things. You're just kind of being like,
right.
Yeah.
Literally just trying not to get fired.
Yeah. Like, you show up and it's like 99%. You're just like, I'm trying to do a good job. I'm trying to become the best writer I can be. I'm trying to get jokes in the script. I'm not, you know what I mean? Like you just don't have the time to spend sort of like even worrying or thinking too much about it.
Yeah.
Like I don't recall like in the moment thinking too much about that. I would have anxiety about like other things, like, that joke died, whatever.
Right.
Like that kind of thing. Not like, oh, the staff that I am not responsible for hiring. It's like,
yeah,
we couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
We were just happy to see each other when we had
each other.
We were never in the same room though.
Oh, they don't like that. Yeah. They would. Oh no.
Well, Family Guy, they like split people off into different rooms.
We would have like a main room and then have like two sort of satellite rooms working on other pieces of the script.
But yeah, I was there for 2 years. I don't think we were ever in the same room.
We might not have been.
Because they were like, you got to split up the girls. They're going to pitch the same jokes.
You have, like, it's honestly. I mean, it's great. Honestly, because there was, before Teresa came, there was Elaine Coe was there for a year, and then she went off and was on Modern Family for the rest of the run. I think I remember being in a room with her one time, the entire time. So yeah, we may have been zero, and she and I might have been one.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's what that was.
Oh, the times.
The times.
Oh, the time. And did you guys start thinking of this idea for Joyride then, or did this like come about later?
Later.
Came about later.
We were both fully off Family Guy and had been for years.
Yeah.
By the time we started writing Joyride.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we had worked on Nora from Queens together at that point, but like we were fully, it was behind us.
It was behind us.
Yes.
Twas behind.
Yes. It was. We weren't seeing each other in the room every day anymore. So then we saw each other on nights and weekends when we were writing.
When we were like, we're actually friends.
Yeah. It's like we've become friends. We've trauma bonded.
Yes.
Yes.
Now we're going to
might as well do another thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like such a beautiful like heart story in the middle of Joyride that sort of allows it to have all of this crazy shit happening. What was that like first nugget of like, okay, this is the heart?
So much of it was like we were friends.
Yeah.
And just being friends, we were like, we want to write a story about us and our friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of where it all came from, of just like, okay, hey, let's just tell each other our crazy stories about things that we've gotten into. But then also like the sort of like, oh, maybe growing up and feeling a little bit left out, because not necessarily because of certain things, obviously the character in the movie is adopted, but just being like, oh, I don't necessarily feel accepted by my community. Mm-hmm. Is that something that like, you know, you also had growing up? Mm-hmm. And so there were definitely elements of like wanting to take stories that our friends had told. And we have a good friend who's adopted as well. And just being like, okay, let's just explore this a little bit. Like we want to tell a heartfelt story, but at the same time, we want to have all the nasty, crazy shit that happens.
Right.
And how do we marry the two so that it comes off like feeling really whole?
Yeah.
But I think we didn't have to. We were doing it on purpose because we knew that we were writing a script. But also at the same time, I think the heart, some of it was effortless just because we are friends and it was fun just getting together and like talking about ideas and like fucking around and trying to make each other laugh. So it was just like, oh, we're hanging out. And OK, also, we're professional writers. So, yes, we're writing a script. But I think, I mean, hopefully, you know, like the fact that like the vibes were good, you know, it like bled through when we were just writing it. It was like a good time.
Yeah.
And it was going to be R-rated because that is. Let's face, that's our sensibility. Like, we got hired on Family Guy for a reason. You know what I mean? Like, we're gross. We're disgusting.
But, like, kind of aren't we all? You know what I mean? At least everyone I know.
Hey, you know, the people who enjoy the movie, yes.
Like, the daddy community? You got it,
Grody. You've embraced the fact that, you know, like, the movie's out there so we can talk about the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've embraced the...
Oh, for sure.
The PTs, the DPs, whatever happened in the movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And along that note, there are so many, I feel like, dream sequences in there. Like, wild, you know, like, the pop star moment, the drugs on the train, basketball. Also... Have I ever told you this? So also, me and Teresa have a mutual best friend, Ashley Park. Did I tell you that me and Ashley traveled with my ex's basketball team, like, all over Europe?
Oh, well.
Literally, when I saw that, I was like, wait, Ashley, did you tell her that?
Wait, really?
This we might have to almost talk about off camera.
Yeah.
Because I saw that and I was like, we literally lived that.
Wait, that's hilarious.
I didn't even know that.
No, that was one of the things, like, talk about things.
Yeah.
We always knew we wanted a K-pop sequence. We always knew we wanted some sort of CBA, like, basketball, like, shenanigan sequence.
Yeah.
And so that was in the script before we ever met Ashley. So that's hilarious.
It's very funny.
Interesting.
I mean, and the basketball thing kind of came about, obviously, we're like, okay, here's the moment of the movie where it's like, we want our actors to all have some fun. We had the Theragun moment with the basketball. And we were at my house and we just tried it.
We had to make sure it works. Got it. Is it going to be safe? Is it going to be safe for the actors? Guess what it is?
Yeah.
If we could learn anything from this movie.
It was great. It feels nice.
I mean, great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's no.
Yeah.
I Theragun Teresa. And then also I have just a very clear, like, sense memory of Teresa in my living room, just like on the couch. And I'm not going to do here because I'm going to thwack this thing, but just like, it's like, yeah, we can get two heads in there. Look, and just her legs going like this. And we're like, yep, that'll work.
I can't remember who said this to me, but somebody said that their like boyfriend or like some guy was like, wait, is that what happens? Like, is that even possible? Like, to get two heads down there?
Listen, is that what happens? Maybe you try to make it happen. Maybe you find.
Yeah, give it a go.
Whatever.
Give it a go. We definitely, one of our producers, I remember we had a table read, and one of our producers was asked that same question. We were just like, but it's funny looking.
But why not? Yeah.
And you know,
it is so funny when it's sped up right there. Oh, my God.
Yeah. The boys did a good job. They did work.
They did work. I love it. Okay. I read somewhere that you guys wrote this on spec.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that? Can you even start from sort of like zero of what writing on spec is?
Yeah.
For our listeners who don't know what that is.
It's literally starting from zero. We were not getting paid. Nobody knew about it except for us, basically. It's like oftentimes in the industry, you need a writing sample. So you write a spec script just by yourself for no reason, just to be able to give something to someone to read. Mm-hmm. Be like, hey, this is like my writing voice or whatever. And so that's what we did. There was no thought that it was, you know what I mean? It was kind of like you start in a cynical place. Like, so many things never become movies. You know what I mean? Like, scripts that are not written on spec that you actually get paid to write oftentimes never become movies. So it was kind of just like us, like, we'll just do this, you know? And then we'll show it to people when we're done.
That was something that was really interesting to us, because we were like, oh, at the time that we were going to write the script, we were like, we were established TV writers. And we're like, we have TV careers. And it's funny because, like, in the film industry, like, they don't care. You're nobody. Yeah. You're zero.
You're starting from zero.
It's just so wild to me.
It's so different. You have to start from zero. But right. Yeah, that's kind
yeah,
of
so,
how it is.
So basically, we were kind of told, you know, like, it's like, you could pitch this out like you would and, like, write a treatment or whatever, but, or you could just write it, mm-hmm. and that would probably be an easier path to get made. And we're like, but people know us. We're TV writers.
Yeah, we've pitched before.
They're like, you're nothing.
Right.
You're nothing. Like, so it's probably easier for you guys to just write it on spec. And that's what we did.
Yeah. Because at that point, we had done the thing where we pitched a TV show where you don't write it, but you go in, you like tell the network about it, whatever it is, and then they buy it. And then you are then paid to write it.
Right.
And so you haven't done all of the work of writing it yet for free. But for movies, it was like, yeah, do that. I was like, okay, we'll do it.
Yeah. How long did it take you guys?
The first draft.
So I think we started writing it in 2018. And I believe we got our producers on board in 2019. Point Grey, mm-hmm. Seth Rogen's production company, they came on board in 2019. We then kept on working on the script. Pandemic happened, obviously, and we shot it in 2021. Mm-hmm. So that whole time from 2018 to 2021, it was like continuous with our producers.
That was basically
writing,
on spec.
Rewriting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we did so many rewrites that was on spec because it had not been set up with the studio yet. Nobody had been like, oh, we're even going to like option the script to even make it a movie. We were all just basically like, you know, the faith of all of us together just being like, hey, let's get this to where it can really happen. Let's
and there was time.
And I had time. Yeah.
We had all the time. And then once they're like, okay, we're going to green light this movie. We're going to hire actors. We're going to bring in actors. Then you rewrite the script just based on the people that cast, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's like, it's a very different movie with, you know, Steph, Ashley, Sabrina, Sherry than it was with, you know, like we just didn't know who, you know, all.
And it's helpful to have that. And then also like, we're rewriting because it's like, now we know we're shooting in Vancouver. Now we know, now these are, you know, this is, there was a long sequence in the draft all the way up until very close to production that had water buffalo. The friends were going to ride water buffalo across.
What?
And it was going to be 40. It was going to be a huge stunt sequence. And it was just like, oh, we can't do that. It's like, first of all, water buffalo are expensive, apparently. And a lot of them don't have horns. So will they wear fake horns? No. And it was just like, and we were just like, all right, it's out. And we had to rewrite the movie. And actually it came out.
The story came out better,
but
I do think,
can you imagine putting our actors through?
Our actors into a river and have a water buffalo try and rip off Kat's skirt was going to be difficult.
It was like just the thought, they were like, and what we can do is we can like pipe in hot water into a holding tank so they can be like warm in the meantime. It was just like, this is Vancouver in the fall. Like, it was going to be a nightmare. Anyway.
Oh my God.
So that was gone. But that was a rewrite that happened like very late in the game.
Were you guys more involved in that too because you were also producers? Or just thinking about like the budgets for the Water Buffaloes?
Oh, for sure. Because we were in those meetings. Yeah. So then it was just like, and it was kind of good. It's like, as producers, we're in the budget meetings. And then as writers, we're like, all right, well, we're writing a cheaper version right now. Yeah. Like, we could just do it.
And I think that was something that was also really interesting and important for us. So I think especially in film, a lot of times you're a movie writer, here's the script, and they're like, okay, goodbye.
Right.
And it happens all the time, especially in movies. It's like, you pass in a script, and they're like, okay, great, now we're going to hand it off to someone else to rewrite that script.
Right.
And there's movies where you see the number of credits, there's like four or five writers on it, and there's probably four or five other writers who aren't even credited that did passes on these big movies.
Right.
So we were really lucky that when we said, hey, here's our spec script, we are going to be producers on it. So like, if you are going to buy the script, we have to be producers on this.
Oh yeah.
And that was something that we basically, it was like the terms of our taking it around. And Point Grey agreed to that, which was really great. Point Grey and Lionsgate. But that was something that was like us being like, okay, we have to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that is rare and hard to do, especially as a writer. A lot of times they buy a script and then they're like, all right, now we're going to farm it away.
Yeah.
So
that may have been, I mean, even though we were starting from scratch in movies, where they were like, whoa, they've got all this TV experience. They've been on sets before. So it's like, you know what I mean? It's like, we're going to hire you as producers. Also, it's like, okay, we're not hiring someone who's like, never, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, well, that, there are familiar elements to having been on a TV set and having to deal with this. So it's like, so at least I think that was probably, maybe, I don't think we've ever necessarily had that specific conversation, but probably helpful in terms of just like, we are also attaching as producers. It's like that we've done before.
Right.
So, you know.
And that was like, another just dumb thing. And I think for everyone to know at the time, which I didn't know, was even though I'd worked in TV a long time, in TV, an executive producer is the highest level of, you know, being, you're like shown, you're an executive producer.
Yeah.
In film, an executive producer is lower than producer. So in film, a producer is higher than executive producer. A lot of times they'll give out like kind of vanity, like, oh, this person was an executive producer on the film, but like a producer is higher than that. Whereas in TV, it's opposite.
Yeah.
And so that was just a thing that I was like, I learned through the process.
Right.
I didn't even know that was something.
No, totally. It's like, and how do you know that?
How would you know?
If you
right. You would never know. But we showed up and we knew, and then we got the producer credit and got like the little PGA mark. And that's like for, you know what I mean? Like that's a whole thing that we also like learned and went through, that is a thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That happens on movies, that you sort of like have to like show your work or whatever. And just like, here's what you did. And we had done it. So PGA, but
really,
yeah,
we can do this.
Yeah,
bitch.
We did it.
I would love to talk about the amazing cast, who I love so much.
Yes,
I know some of them, so I'm not going to be biased, but I'm obsessed with them. So what was the process of putting your cast together? And as just writers, how much would you normally get a say in that? But then as producers and writers, what is your role?
As just writers in a feature, normally we would have nothing.
Yeah.
But since we were producers, we had everything. Like, we were there from start to finish in the casting process. So that was very nice.
Yeah, and just in terms of, like, going one by one through all the characters, for Audrey, we always had in mind Ashley Park, who obviously is just incredible. And we had seen her work in Emily in Paris and Mean Girls and just been like, well, she would be amazing.
Right.
And then, remember, she came in. She did a Zoom audition. I think she was filming Emily in Paris at the time.
Yeah.
And we were, like, crying.
Like, we just, like, she did, like, that sort of, like, the version of the, you know, sort of sensitive, like, sort of, like, mom scene that existed at the time. And it was just like, well, that, okay.
Yeah.
It was actually one of the, I would say, like, one of the rare times in an audition where you're, like, so stunned into being like, wow, she just nailed it so hard that you're like, I don't even, like, she was like, do you want me to do it again? And I was like, no.
Seems good. Yeah. Or it's like, literally. Yeah.
Yeah. She was really, I mean, and obviously Ashley brings so much like, because that character is like, could be a very like just straight character, like doesn't have that many jokes, obviously has to do like the sort of emotional stuff at the end, but she just brings, I mean, like this goofy quality.
For sure.
Yeah.
Which is great. And she's obviously, she's so funny, but like also like in a way that she's unintentionally funny.
Mm-hmm. And she has so much heart too. I feel like that,
oh, yeah,
that combo is so rare, and she does it so earnestly.
Yeah.
It's just, it is perfect for her. When I saw it for the first time, like some cut of it at some point, I was just like, yeah.
Yeah. And we, by the way, when we got her there, we're like, well, we have a whole K-pop sequence, so now that's going to be awesome. All right.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because, like, that was going to happen no matter what. And it's like, oh, it's going to happen. It's going to be great. You know? Yeah. It's like, oh, we got the singer-dancer. Okay. Yeah.
So she was first, and then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Teresa mentioned, you know, just, like, Ashley's, like, natural, like, funniness. And, like, they all four of them improvised so much. And some of that improv was happening already in the auditions. Like, Sherry... Like, when she went on tape, there were definitely that giant mouth thing when she opens her mouth and they're like, why is your mouth so big? That was just something that she, like, pulled out in the audition, full improv, that everybody died. And it was like, okay, well, you're hilarious. And
we're
also,
like, have to
that should just
movie.
Also go right in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Stephanie and Sherry were both, like, we both sort of saw them as Lolo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of later in the process where, like, Steph was also so funny, but we were like, maybe we can try her as Kat. And that was kind of one of our producers, Josh from Point Grey, was like, you know, like, let's think about Stephanie as Kat. And at first we were like, oh, well, we had this vision of Kat as a kind of different character. But then once Steph pulled out her version of Kat, we were like, that is what it is. That
like,
is
that,
exactly.
It was one of those oh my God, the acting moments, because she came in, was hilarious auditioning for Lolo, mm-hmm. then, you know, went away and then came in and was a completely different Kat. And, you know, and it was just like, oh, right. Yes. Acting. Great acting. Yes. 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 Yay. Okay. We'll take that.
Yeah. And I'd known Stephanie because she had done Awkwafina's Nora from Queens.
Right.
She had done this great part with where she was the young grandma in an episode that the Daniels directed. And so I was like, I just want to work with Steph again in some capacity. And so once we were like, okay, we've got these three locked in,
mm-hmm.
and Deadeye was always going to be the hardest kind of person to try and cast. And Sabrina is just this force. Like, they came in, they had this audition. I think they told us later that they had taped like
184 takes, something insane. They were like, if you look at the light from the beginning to the, you know what I mean? It's like the light had changed, like, throughout, because they were doing it all day. They just, that's how many, like, tapes they sent in.
And it was funny because in our minds, like, the Deadeye character obviously is so unique, but also, like, we don't want them to be the butt of the joke. We want someone to, like, to take it and really, like, bring a lot of humanity to it.
Yeah.
And Sabrina is just, they're such a force because they're someone that who's incredibly funny on their own, but yet, like, you have this deep, deep, like, empathy with them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also so crazy.
Yeah.
So that was exactly what that character was, and basically rounded out that foursome.
If you guys could pick, like, a moon sign and rising sign mm-hmm. of these characters that, like, best describes you, what would it be? So, like, your moon sign is what your core is, and then the rising is sort of, like, what you present to the world.
Oh, okay. I'm Deadeye. And then I guess rising is, and we had this discussion that as producers, you kind of all have to be on your game. So then Audrey.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Deadeye, main, Audrey, rising?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's amazing.
We were like, oh, Cherry's Deadeye.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. It's like every time it was like, I'm Deadeye. Okay, anyway. And then, yeah.
Yeah.
Hands, yeah.
I love that.
I think I'm an Audrey, even though I'm a wannabe Lolo, mm-hmm. but I'm really an Audrey.
Mm-hmm.
With a Lolo rising, but like a Lolo slash Kat, right? I don't know. But
there's a shenanigan in there.
I'm a little bit of a rascal.
I mean, look at her hat.
Yes.
You know, yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, I'm sure it was just crazy on set. Like, I was hearing from Ashley just how much fun you guys were having rewriting things on the go with alts. Did you have alts prepared when you were coming in, or was it just playing at the moment?
Both. So we did them by the day. So we would come in and we would write alts. And we had two on-set writers, Jess Dweck and Nina Kim, who were also in the joke tent writing alts. And we would have those prepared. But then we would also come up with them on the fly. And the actors mm-hmm. would also come up with their own improv on the fly. And then sometimes we'd all kind of work together.
Yeah.
So it was like...
Wait, can you also explain what an alt is?
Oh.
Or like how it's written in a script?
Yes, yes, yes.
So basically you have your script as written. Mm-hmm. And then there are these spots where you mark of like, oh, okay, I think here that there's a joke and we want to have different alts for that joke. And so we would basically park out on that one joke and say, all right, Now let's do this next line. Now let's do this next line. Now let's do this next line. And so we would have options in editing to be able to like kind of say, all right, well, we tried this one joke. Now we're going to, it failed for whatever reason. Now we're going to like swap it out with this next joke.
Yeah.
And so it's really important, especially in a comedy, to have those options because, again, there are things that you're like, wow, this is like the funniest thing I've ever heard. And then once it's on its feet, you're like, ooh, it didn't actually work. Or maybe the audience didn't like it or the audience didn't get it. Or it's just not funny coming out of the actor's mouth. But then, so that's why you just need a lot of different alts.
Yeah. And then in the edit, how big of a part were you guys in that?
Oh, we were also in that the entire
the whole time.
Yeah, because yeah. We were okay, producers, we just did everything.
Right.
So, yeah, but that was where we were just like, whoo, we're glad that as writers, we did so many alts.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's so many moments where you're like, oh, I wish we had more.
Yeah.
But of course, you're always going to think that. Right. Obviously, it's like at every point, you're just like, oh, I wish I had more of this or we should do something else. But that I think, especially in a comedy, is like you just want to have a lot of different options at any right. time. And that's something that I'll say, like, again, I think Cherry mentioned, like the actors were so good at thinking on their feet, but also just being able to play around with this and being like willing to do so, because it's like it's exhausting to be on set, mm-hmm. to do your 12-hour days and then to be like thinking of new things on the fly or be thrown new things all the time on the fly. And they were so game for all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, okay, here's 12 more lines that we gave you 5 seconds before you know what I mean? And right. they were just like, okay, great, we'll do it. So it was very nice,
yeah.
all hands on deck kind of thing.
It makes it so fun.
Yeah. yeah.
It's like a collaboration.
It is. That's the thing. It's just like, that's so nice. The nice thing about like shooting a comedy as well, it's just like, it's honestly, it's like you are laughing so much of the day. So even though yeah. everyone is dead tired, nobody slept, everybody's working all weekend, everyone has, you know what I mean? But you come in and then you can't help but laugh because it's funny. So that's,
right.
it's nice.
And did you guys edit as you went along or after?
Our editor was getting stuff as we went along, but then we didn't sit down as producers until
later. But yeah, we were definitely editing as we went along. So she was putting together her cut.
And I also just feel like editing is like such a special thing to like learn about too,
yeah.
because there's mm-hmm. so much, especially in comedy, I mean in everything, but like that you find in the edit that you didn't even know existed.
Totally.
Or like moments you can build that were literally not there.
Yes. Yep.
yep.
It's just so fun. Is this the first time you guys have gotten to be in the edit the whole time?
I guess, well, because you have a show, so you edited your entire show.
Yeah.
And I had done separate episodes of like the shows that I had worked on.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was my first time start to finish, like yeah. the entire thing. So that was cool.
Sick. We love this.
Yeah.
So produce your own shit as well.
Right.
Yes.
Sign on to be
do
a
it
producer
all.
If you can.
Yes. Yes. So obviously this is a raunchy comedy about women. We've already discussed. We think all women are kind of just like that. Were you guys surprised by the reaction that the movie got?
I mean... I don't know. Yes. And I guess I would be more surprised. You know what I mean? That anyone who was scandalized, like, and then I was actually surprised my parents thought it was less raunchy than, you know, because I'd warned
yeah.
them. It's going to be nasty. I'm so sorry. You know, just, you know, it's very R-rated, blah, all the stuff. They watched it. They were like, that wasn't that bad. So it was like, oh, okay.
I it was more like us both being scared of what our parents were going to think.
That's
and my
so funny.
Parents ended up watching it like 6 times. They brought like 6 different groups of their friends
aww,
to go see it.
Cute.
And I was like, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's like, all right, great.
Thank you for that. But also like, that's insane. And so that was really funny and nice. But yeah, I mean, I think there's like, we're glad so many people got to see it. And especially this mm-hmm. new group of people of like, hey, here are Asian people doing these raunchy things. I think that's something that is very, we never saw it.
They hadn't done it
sure.
before.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And so that was really exciting just to be able to like, hey, let's bring this to the fold.
Yeah. Ashley, after the premiere, she comes up to me. First thing she says is she's like, how dare you? I'm like, what? She's like, you didn't sit next to me. I had to sit between my parents watching this movie, them watching it for the first time. She's like, how could you do this to me as my friend? And I was like, you know what? You're right. Like, you're so right.
Yeah.
It was shaming on that.
As the writers, that was the thing. It's like, yeah, we did not have to be Ashley having to, her parents having to watch their daughter do those things. Knowing that your daughter wrote the things is different. It's like, yes.
It's hard because I remember Ashley's mom, she had come on set.
Yeah.
She had, you know, we basically got to talking and she was just like, she's so sweet. She's so lovely. And she was just like, is there any way we can make the movie PG-13?
Stop.
And I was like, oh,
literally. Oh my God, what a cutie.
She was like, what if you took out all the swears? And I was like, oh, I don't know. yeah. And I remember Ashley didn't tell her at all any of the things that were going to happen. Yep. And so I was like, oh, she's going to be so mad at me. I remember her being like, I'm just going to blame you.
Yeah.
And I was
like, I mean, it's true. Honestly, please do as the actor, please be like, I did not come up with this. This is not my idea. I was just doing a job. They're disgusting. And it's like, yeah, we'll take the heat.
Yeah, we'll take the heat. But it was just so funny. It was just like, I don't think if we made it PG-13, the movie's like 17 minutes long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not much. Well,
and also just like, there are so many other movies that were so much worse happens.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, guys, come. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. We're angels.
Although I really did miss the, at the ending, can you guys talk about the scene that was cut?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, are we talking about the park?
Yeah, the park.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought that was so. Yeah.
Oh, what else?
Guys,
talk about all of it.
Here's the thing. Movies go through a lot of versions. You know what I mean? There's reshoots, there's this, there's that, because you do see it with audiences. You see what works and what doesn't.
Test screenings. Can you tell us what that is?
That is when you take the movie. It's like there's sort of a, you know, there's a very, very early screening where it's like friends and family and you can actually get feedback. But test screening is like you go to an actual theater, you get like 200 or 300 people to sit in the actual theater. And, you know, they're like regular people. They just, you know, signed up for this thing and then they watch it and they fill out a survey and some of them stay to talk afterwards. And that's kind of like the first time you ever see it with that many people and with people who basically are like not in the industry and don't, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and so that's like real audience feedback. And that's where, as Teresa was saying, it's like sometimes something that you thought was like really funny does not play in Irvine or whatever it is, you know, like, but that's where you really learn that you swap that out for another alt and see whether there's something that is equally as funny, but that more people understand.
Yeah.
So there was definitely a lot of work in between our couple test screenings to, you know, change some things around.
Yeah.
Because at these screenings, you actually get a test score. So it's essentially like, I think sometimes it's a test. And so you get a score and then the camera, by the way, is on the audience the whole time. So we watch through the whole movie again.
You can see people's faces.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
To see audience reaction, because you'll be like, oh, were they laughing at this moment? Were they laughing at this moment? Were they crying at this moment? So you actually get so much feedback. And we watched so many audience test screenings of like people's reactions be like, oh, I don't think this played as well as we thought it was going to.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really important. It's like empirical data for a creative process, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that's what you we were lucky enough to do 3 test screenings. And that is because it was a theatrical movie. It was a bigger movie. And so we had Lionsgate had the resources to say, like, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
I think if it's an even bigger movie, if you're doing like a Marvel movie, I don't even know how many test screenings they have.
Oh, God.
I'm sure it's a lot. But basically, to get back to your question, we had done these test screenings where we had an ending. Originally, the ending was going to be set at Lolo is able to, the park that she shows in the beginning of the movie, basically comes to life and she's able to like have this sort of body positivity park come to life and all these children are playing around on these like big blue penises and these nipple swings and there's a boob sandbox and it's crazy.
Yeah.
And we filmed it. And the audience was just like horrified. They hated it so much. Especially the part where like the kids are like riding these like fun little bouncy big blue penises and then the penises start shooting water out of the tip.
Yep.
And
people across the board were like, maybe not that. And we were like, okay, that's fair.
Fine.
When you get the data, and there were also, you know, thoughts that like maybe the movie's ending could be more satisfying if it was wrapped up in a different way, which I think we ended up doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like, that was like, well, here's the data. That seems clear.
And, yeah.
You know, so thanks for the reshoot money, Lionsgate.
Yeah. I love the idea of just like physically getting that made.
You know
what I mean?
Okay.
Like, I don't think people think, like, people watch these movies and they don't think about like, this actually happened.
We went to a park. The park was not shut down. There were public people still able to like bike through the park and see what we were doing. We all got our pictures on the swings. You know what I mean? Like on the penises. Come on. It's hilarious. Like those things are made. Have they been trashed now? We don't know. Are they in storage somewhere? We're not, you know what I mean? But
we had a fun time.
We had a fun day.
But it will never be seen.
Right. Yeah. Cutting room floor.
Just in our memory.
Correctly. But it was, what a day.
Yes. Oh my God. Well, This has been lovely. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I could talk to you guys obviously forever. Can you please tell the lovely people of Not Your Daddy's Films where they can follow you, and if you have anything coming up that you want to be like, check this out, plug it here.
Plug, Joyride is currently available on Stars and the Hulu, the Stars on Hulu app is where it's at right now. On Instagram, I'm Cherry_Achieva.
On Instagram, oh, I don't know what my Teresa dot.
I think it's a dot. I think there's a dot.
Dot Chow. H-S-I-A-O. And if it's not that, then someone else is getting the follows.
Fine.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah! Daddy Dailies is presented by Not Your Daddy's Films, a social impact organization dedicated to educating and empowering women and non-binary creatives in TV and film. If you like what you heard today, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a positive review. And if you want more Daddy episode insights and links to what we talked about, join us on Patreon.com/NYD Films. Daddy Dailies is produced in partnership with Robert Bailey and edited by Carly Tamarin, Fika Stubblebine, Claudia Restrepo, and Gracie Strauss. See you next time, Daddy.